Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Monday, December the 16th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Need an incubator? Think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brinsea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brinsea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brinsea. Technology you can trust.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Hope you had a wonderful weekend with family and friends. We sure did. It is another Monday. And as we start this chock-full week of great educational information here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, today we've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, who's going to be joining us here shortly. Another great topic about really identifying issues once the baby chicks hatch. So kind of follow along with what we discussed last Monday. So today, again, Peter Brown, the Chicken Doctor. Tomorrow, we've got another special evening episode. We've got All About Quail with the Quail Lady, Alexandra Douglas. And she'll be joining us tomorrow, Tuesday the 17th. But it is going to be an evening show, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So we're going to try another evening show this month, and it works out a little bit better for her schedule. So that's what we're going to do. But hey, nonetheless, thousands of archive listeners can't be wrong, and they listen whether we've recorded at 9 or 10 or 12 or 8. So got to love it. But you can listen live still tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with the Quail Lady, Alexandra Douglas. Then this Wednesday, Garden Wise Living with Aralina. That's just this Wednesday, same time, 12 p.m. And then this coming Thursday, poultry scientist and professor Dr. Bridget McRae, Ph.D., and we'll probably do another small flock Q&A. We had such a good time doing that the last time she was on. We'll probably do that again. So we do have a week full of educational information for you, and, of course, we'll do that and have a good time all at the same time. So got to love it. But, again, thank you very much for tuning in. Hope you had a good weekend. I was hoping I could make a big announcement live on the air today, but not quite ready. Not quite ready. I hate doing that. And then something backfires or it's not quite what we thought it to be. So not quite ready. We may have enough information comfortably posted later today. If not, we will not do it before it is due. I can assure you of that. But we are working on a very big project, which would benefit every single chicken keeper out there. And it's kind of tight-lipped right now, but hopefully very excited. That's why I'm a little late. I was on a conference call that ran over a little bit, but trying to get all the information, and there's a lot of studying that has to be done in any business decision. You have to really do that so you don't make a mistake. And mistakes will be made with business and new reaches, but nonetheless, in this particular field that we're reaching into, a lot has to be done before you just jump in and start doing something. So I'll make some more phone calls this afternoon, and maybe another phone call back to my contacts after that, and then hopefully maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow, it may not even be until Friday or Thursday, but we're working on a very big project I think everybody would be very proud of and would be able to benefit from, whether you have 5,000 free-range hens or you have 6 hens in your backyard in affluent suburban Atlanta. It will definitely benefit anybody and everybody. So looking forward to that. So but nonetheless, thank you very much for joining us. I want to send a shout-out to all the homeschoolers that tune into the show. Thank you very much for tuning in, and thanks for incorporating this show into your curriculum. Over-the-road truck drivers we hear from, keep the rubber on the road. We thank you for tuning in as well. All of our live listeners and our chat room chicken ears, and, of course, our archive listeners as well. Thank you very much for tuning in today. Let me go over here and see. I'm not sure if this is Peter or not. I don't recognize that number, but I'm not sure if that's Peter that's called in or not. So just give me a second and see if this is Hello? Nope. I don't think. Area code 407? Listening via telephone, so not it. I think that was Peter. So, no worries. Let me see here. Let me, I don't see where he has called in, so I'm going to put everybody on hold for a second on the switchboard, and then I'm going to give Peter a call, and because there was a delay, he might have thought there ended up wasn't going to be a show, but he did email over the topic for today, so I think he knew there was going to be a show, and it may just be because I was running late with my conference call. There we go. That number looks familiar. Very, very good. All righty. Let's go ahead and give Peter Brown a Chicken Whisperer welcome. I knew it was 4-something. I couldn't remember. It was 407, 409, 410, something like that, Peter. But thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, I tuned in a little earlier and there wasn't anybody around, so I didn't know what was going on. So.
Yeah, I had a conference call that ran late, and I had posted in the chat room that, hey, we may start a little late today, but I was on the phone, so I couldn't give you a call to let you know. But no thanks for chiming back in and checking us out. And we are live, and we are chomping at the bit here to get started. So got to love it. And, of course, we are going to continue today's topic kind of along the topic we did last Monday, really kind of identifying issues at the early stages. And today's topic is, of course, using egg breakouts to determine hatch failure causes. So we've got our Chicken Whisperer notebooks open. Folks, if you're a new listener and don't, I'll encourage you to go get some pen and paper and take some notes, as a lot of our longtime and regular listeners do, because it's always great information. We have Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, on. So that's good. Hey, if you're hatching out, if you get day-old baby chicks delivered, or you know, hatch out, this spring you're going to hatch out, it's definitely something you want to add to your educational notebook so you can refer to it if you've got some issues this spring. So, Peter, I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend.
Okay. You know, last week we talked about, you know, navel ill, mushy chick disease, all of that kind of stuff, omphalitis, which are all, you know, bacterial infections basically, or ones that are caused by problems with incubation. And, you know, through my travels through the Internet, through phone calls and all of the things that I do, we continually get, you know, questions about incubation and, you know, what causes this, what causes that, how come I'm getting so many, you know, dead in shell, or those that fail to pip out, or they pip but they don't get out. And there are a, you know, in this short period of time that we have, especially today being a little bit shorter, you know, we can always cover, you know, another day, whatever we don't get on to here, but and maybe we'll cover it all. I'll try to move as quickly as I can, because there are so many different things that interact with whether, you know, embryo is either going to develop or anything along those lines. A couple of things I want to stress right off the bat that I think are extremely important. I've said some of them before here, maybe all of them, but I think a big set of parentheses needs to be put around these following statements, basically, and that is an egg is already starting to develop the embryo prior to, or let's go back one step, a fertile egg is already starting to develop that embryo prior to the egg being laid. And I think that a lot of people either don't think about it or don't realize it. I really don't know the answer to that. But the way you treat that egg is extremely important as to, you know, what the possible outcome will be at the end of the day. And you've heard me say this before as well. You know, anybody can hatch the darn things. You know, you can get them out of the shell for the most part, and halfway viable chicks. What we really want is good, healthy, solid, robust chicks that give you the least amount of grief when you're trying to raise them up into adults. And therein, yet generally, lies the biggest part of the problem, where I don't think people realize that. For instance, if you think about this, once the rooster mates with the hen and the sperm works its way up the oviduct, generally within about 5 hours, that egg is going to be fertilized, and immediately less than 5 hours. But once that meeting of the germ disk and the sperm takes place, you got about 5 hours, and development starts. I mean, it's probably starting in its extreme infinite ways at that point. But by 5 hours, it's actually distinguishable. You know, obviously under a microscope and stuff. But you know, there are things that can be seen. You know, at that early time of incubation, and we don't look at it as being incubation inside of the hen, but it is. And once that egg is laid, it's how you handle it after that determines, for the most part, how this embryo will turn out, if it does turn out. And, you know, last week we talked about, you know, a lot of this stuff being, you know, science and art. The science part's all figured out for you, and, you know, how long it takes, the incubation period, the humidity, the temperature, the turn, no turn, large end up, small end down, you know, good shell, bad shell, all of that kind of stuff and everything else. But just people lose track of this part, I do believe, because of what I'm seeing and hearing from people, what I see, you know, on the Internet. And there are different things we know from our whole series we did on incubation, when we talked about circadian incubation and stuff. We talked about temperature changes at certain periods of time for a specific length of time. We're able to alter the behavior of the chicks after they hatched. And the particular methodology there was to get them to be more sensitive to, resistant to, rather, heat and cold. And, you know, that in itself is a huge thing. You may say, well, you know, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is if you are brooding 100,000 chickens in a chicken house and you have to keep it warmer, that's going to cost you more money. Your carbon footprint is bigger. Your outlay for heating materials to heat them, I say materials because all over the world they use different things, and predominantly here they use gas. Brooders, but so that would make a big difference. A bird that was more tolerant to heat as it grew up and was growing out would certainly do well in places in the Middle East and Saudi Arabia and places like that where it's hotter than all get out, and even in areas of the United States here, you know, where it gets hot in the summertime and trying to keep the temperature in a chicken house that's full of chickens that are giving off body heat like crazy and keep the temperature at a reasonable 70-plus degrees while it's almost 100 degrees outside. So it's a big chore. And having those birds be more tolerant makes a big difference. And I bring that up again partly because there was a conversation that I did see where they talked about the possibility of problems during incubation causing extra digits on feet and so on and so forth, and that more than likely is true. I haven't seen the specific research on it, but knowing what I know over the years of watching these things and reading other research papers, if the timing is right, they will probably end up with another digit where you don't want it, and that kind of thing, and it can be caused by incubation. So the whole idea of what we're talking about here is to kind of like be an Inspector Clouseau, not quite as clumsy, but looking and overturning the rocks and looking under them. In this case, they'd be eggs, and breaking them open, those that don't hatch, and trying to determine at what age they died. Again, going back and looking at the embryo as it starts to develop in the hen, we said this before on the show, about 22 days incubation, roughly, give or take a little bit, because of the amount of time that the egg will be inside of the hen. Whether the egg was ovulated late in the day and will be retained in the lower part of the uterus and then expelled the next morning makes a big difference. It makes a big difference when you pick it up, what temperature it is in the hen house, whether it's cold, whether it's hot, and all of those things. The overall age of the breeders that you're using, young, old, can make a big difference as to how well that egg will or will not hatch and the embryo development within. Just to give you one more idea here, about 25, 26 hours into the incubation cycle, okay, now this is taking place either still inside the hen's body or just shortly after the egg has been expelled from the uterus. And already at that point, there are muscles that are starting to develop that are microscopic, basically, but kind of look like a polywog in a sense. And the blood islands are starting to develop all that early on, because you only got 21 days or so to get this thing done and roll it all out into one little fuzzball at 21 days and have it be healthy and so on. So what we want to try to do is we want to try to take these eggs and open them. You can use any dish size that you want. A shallow bowl with real shallow sides is good. And break them out one at a time. It's a tedious job. I think sometimes that's why folks don't do it. Probably the other one is a lot of them may not be knowing what they're looking at in the first place. But it shouldn't deter you from opening it up and seeing what you see. There's plenty of people that you can get a hold of, myself and whatever, that can direct you as to what may or may not be going on and what may be causing a particular event that you might be seeing. And so it's critical that you learn to take care of the egg. The constant exposure to heat and cold, and when I say cold doesn't necessarily mean we have to be at 32 or 14 below. If you look at the egg average hen's blood temperature being about 106 degrees and the egg being incubated around 100 degrees, when you start dropping down and getting those swings in temperature, you start the embryo to grow, and then you stop it, start it, stop it, start it, stop it. You can't do that too many times before it doesn't start again. And so those are some of the things that you want to look for, some of the things that are important to just how this whole thing is going to turn out at the end of the day. And I know we've talked about this next subject in this egg breakout thing before, because it's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. Constant candling of eggs is detrimental to a good hatch, and detrimental to the overall well-being of the birds. I see people posting, I guess it's a thing where they're so excited about what's going on that they can't wait to see some development. But being prudent about it and being wise about it will give you less deads and less problems with with birds, that you're trying to hatch out. So right around the fourth day of incubation, you want to stay away from handling the eggs at all at that point in time. I personally don't see the point in even messing with them at that point in time. But we did talk about this before. This is when the allantois pushes itself outside of the body of the bird itself, of the embryo. And that connects to what's later known as the cloaca. And if you're spinning this egg around, you're disturbing this developmental process. And many, many times we see that this is the problem with this at around 4 days of age. There's two other times that you shouldn't be messing with either one of them, and that would be the ninth day of incubation. And again, we've got the allantois still moving around outside, trying to get around the entire embryo and the yolk and stuff. And when you start spinning these things around, you interrupt that process again. And this one here may be more critical than all of them, so I would stay away from candling eggs on the fourth day, the ninth day, and the other one that I think is equally as critical would be the 17th day. You want to stay away from doing that. And the reason being is this is a time that is extremely critical to the bird getting itself in position to hatch over the next few days. You're almost at the end of the incubation cycle, and if you start monkeying around with them, then these can end up as your pipped shells with birds that are not getting out because what's called their oviposition, which means the position that they're going to be in the egg in relation to how they get out becomes what we call breach, so to speak. It will be any number of different ways other than the normal way, which would be the head under the right wing, so that they can use the head and the neck muscles of the neck and the wing to, once it's pipped and around the shell, to push the shell out and get itself out. So if you're monkeying around those days and you got a lot of birds that either, or eggs rather, that have pipped the shell, it is one of the major, but not the only problem associated with that, but it is a major problem when people tend to be overzealous in their candling. Unless you need the room, it really doesn't matter, in my opinion. If you were running a commercial hatchery, it might be a different story. But in a backyard, small flock holder setting, I would refrain from candling the eggs because you can't fix what's already there anyway. So, you know, the more you open an incubator up, the more you change the dynamics of the incubator itself, the air, you know, obviously gets colder, the humidity's gone, you've got to start that all over again. I wouldn't camp my eggs at all if I absolutely had to. But what you're going to want to try to do is to look at birds during the at the end of the incubation process and do a process where you're going to break the egg open and you're going to try to determine as best you can when they died, and then from that point on try to make a determination as to what caused them to die. And And obviously, at the end of the day, the reason for this is that you can then take that information and go about fixing the situation and getting it to a position that's going to give you the healthiest, you know, more robust chick that you're really looking for and the best possible hatch that you can get. You know, by and large, you know, most people are not successful enough over a period of time to get, you know, 100% hatches. They're more rare than common. They do happen, but they are more rare than common. The more care you take, the better opportunity you're going to have to get into that type of a category where you're going to be able to get the maximum hatch, whether that be 100% or 90% and that type of thing. But I see an awful lot of people with birds that either don't hatch, haven't hatched properly, pipped, not pipped, and that kind of thing. So it would behoove you to do an egg breakout and then, you know, find out from there exactly, you know, what's causing the problem and go about rectifying it. Now, there are many, many different causes. I think the most common one is in my opinion, and everybody will have different opinion, and that's fine, the handling of the eggs prior to incubation is critical. A lot of folks are buying shipped in eggs, and the longer the eggs sit around Andy?
I'm here, yep.
Whatever you're doing has got a load of static in my ear.
Yep, there's the wind's blowing. I put myself off. I was on mute earlier, and then I took myself off mute so I could tell you they were, actually, it was going to be funny and say, hey, put that microphone down by your glottis so we can hear you better. But they were saying there was some feedback on your end and in the chat room, and I was like, well, I was on mute, so it wasn't me, and then I got off mute, and that's when you heard the wind, and,
okay.
And I fixed that problem now. So
that's okay.
I'm now on the inside, and they're on the outside going for a walk. So The wind noise shouldn't be an issue anymore, but if you could get the mic a little closer to you, that'll solve both problems.
It's about as close as it's going to get. So.
Okay, nope, sounds good. And I'll go back on mute.
Hopefully it'll get better. But
okay, great.
At any rate, you're going to break these eggs open, and the whole idea behind it is to try to find out what's going on and what caused it, and then go back and fix it. So technically, you have three periods of and you can break it down any way you choose. But they look at what we call early deads, those that die within the first 7 days of incubation. Then a mid-dead, middle dead, or whatever, and that's around 8 to 14 days, and then your late dead's 15 to 19 days and beyond. Generally are all caused by different types of situations, so it's important to you to learn at what stage of development the bird is, and then when you break these eggs open, you can see when they died and that kind of thing. Sometimes it might be smart I wouldn't say you have to know every little bit of development, because in the first few days you're not really going to be seeing a whole lot with the naked eye anyway, other than blood rings and those kinds of things and the blood islands and so on. But as the bird starts to develop, you will look for specific things that are very prominent, and then you can judge for yourself then where that bird may have, at what age that bird may have died. And you can get pretty accurate with this after a while. For instance, if you look at an embryo that is roughly in the 9 day of age category, okay, you're going to see eyes that are very prominent. They're visible before, but they're very prominent now, okay. At this point in time, and right around that time, might be a tad earlier, depending on the breed and this and that and the other thing, and the amount of incubation that was done, if the temperatures were right or they weren't right. Sometimes some of these things can be a little bit slower than we're talking about, but pretty much within the same ballpark, you're going to see a chick tooth and that kind of thing. You generally won't see everything, like, for instance, scales and stuff. Those will come like a day after. Each successive day, you don't generally start to see down and stuff till 12, 13 days in that range. The embryo prior to the 10-day time frame is very pliable, okay? And after you reach 12, 13 days or so, now the bones are starting to calcify and be more rigid. So there's a whole lot of things that you can do, to look at. You can also look at the scales that appear. The legs and the wings, looking more early on for those down at 6-7 weeks, you'll start to see them really develop. So you're looking for the amount of development. Obviously, the bigger something is, the later the bird died versus the earlier the bird may have died from an abnormality. Most of the time, when you just see blood rings in the beginning, those are all usually problems that are associated with egg handling, how the eggs were kept, how long they were held, the age of the breeders, all of these things. It can be other things. It can be vitamin deficiencies, amino acids, all of the things. We've talked about some of this before. But it all boils down to when and where all of these things take place, and then you start to look at specific things that would lead to you to find the underlying problem, and then go ahead and try to fix that. If a bird is died at 17, 18, 19 days of age, you're going to see a pretty well-developed bird, and then you start having to look at nutritional problems. And it's probably, there are two things that stand out mostly for birds that die when they're almost fully formed or are fully formed out at that point in time. And that's usually nutritional and or a contamination problem, some sort of bacterial contamination of the egg prior to being set, or something happened in the incubator wasn't clean, or there was some sort of leftover bacterial contamination from, could have been other eggs around it that were set, that might have been dirty, or floor eggs, those kinds of things. So all of those kinds of things will be things that you can look and put your hand on and, look at things along those lines. For instance, right around 20 days, the yolk sac gets pulled into the body cavity. If the yolk sac's pulled in, you know it happened between then and the time that the egg was supposed to hatch. I've seen also where some folks have posted some things about the hatch. One bird hatched today. Maybe this was the 21st day, and the others, you could still hear some, there was a little bit of a pipping going on, but the others weren't done, and a day or so later, the majority of them hatched out. It's what we call a straggled hatch or a delayed hatch, and it's usually caused by improper temperature during the incubation period. It can be not allowing the eggs to come to a relative room temperature prior to incubation. So if you're keeping them in a real cold place, if your basement is real cool, let's say around 50 or 60 degrees, and you're keeping them there in a storage type thing, or you're keeping them in a refrigerator, or wherever you're doing it, if you don't let them come gradually back up to temperature, room temperature, and then put them in an incubator, because it just takes longer for the incubator to do it. So the incubator sits there, and the temperature doesn't go up, and the egg is really not developing the way you'd like it to. Andy?
Yeah, we know that, of course, that if you have an incubator with a little bit higher temperature, chicks may hatch a little sooner, or lower temperature may hatch a little later. There's been a question pop up in the chat room. I guess this is kind of a loaded question. What is the lowest temp and the highest temp the chick embryo can actually take in the incubator and still survive? She added that, and still survive, based on if you have a power outage, or maybe you, oops, I set the incubator by the window and the sun was hitting it and it got up to 106. And, of course, that may be a loaded question because it may depend, obviously, on what stage we're at, if we're on day 3 or day 19. I guess that could change as well. But I guess that's the main question is what are maybe the true danger temps, both on the low side and the high side?
I'm not sure I know the exact low side, but I will say this, that let's address the high side first, because that's kind of easy in relation to the other one. What happens on the high side depends on the age of the embryos. The more mature the embryos, the more detrimental it is to them. And the reason for that is that as they grow, they are constantly giving off heat. So now, let's say you've got 40 eggs or so in your incubator, and they're all up there at 18 days of incubation. They're throwing off quite a bit of heat on their own, and the machine is probably not putting all that much input heat-wise, only when needed. Now you come along and have an event happen, change in temperature in the room, that drives that temperature up. The incubator starts going up over 106 or whatever, and the longer it stays there, the more detrimental it'll be to the embryos. So, once you start getting over that 100 degree thing, it really depends on the size of the embryo. And here's another problem with this whole situation: when the temperature is allowed to be too high, then you get faster development. So now you start pushing them, along a little faster, and then they start hatching out. They're green. They're not really the way they should be. The albumin might not be totally absorbed the way it should be. They're sticky. And the same thing can happen with the temperature drop down the other way. And again, you go back to what I was saying before, that too much of that yo-yo effect up and down, even prior to incubation, causes embryo death. And it's one of my little pet peeves. I guess you develop these things as you do the things that I do. But I can't tell you how many times I've read, and I know you have too, either on Facebook or some other place, you know, about those damned shipped eggs that wouldn't hatch. Well, they're not supposed to really be treated the way they are. We're lucky they do. Helping somebody investigate this was a commercial operation, and they had some very poor hatches and stuff, and they were not happy with the rate of hatch, and they couldn't understand it. They went through everything. Incubation was fine and this and that and the other thing. And what we came to find out was that, and it's through a lot of investigation, you know, you have a hunch, you have an idea because of egg breakouts and everything else, but we couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And we were having a lot of dislodged air cells, embryos malpositioned, even though they were large end up and so on, and come to find out that the road that went to the hatchery was full of potholes. And, you know, the driver didn't really take into consideration that, wow, you know, that he had a precious cargo in the back. I mean, you know, it's all management. It's all how you deal with it. You know, if he was told in the beginning, how precious the cargo was. Maybe not precious to him. He might not have cared anything about that but a chicken sandwich. But at the end of the day, it is a precious cargo, depending on who you are and where you are in the whole scheme of things. But, I've seen that happen even in commercial companies. I saw a grow-out manager for one of the poultry companies here just hiring new hands to go out and vaccinate birds in the field. And, you know, it is, no doubt, one of the nastiest jobs a person can have besides catching chickens and hanging chickens on shackles in a processing plant, in my opinion. But instead of telling them how important that job was and that any mistakes they made would show up in a processing plant in poor profits and condemned birds and everything else, you went the opposite direction and told them how nasty and stinky and lousy and crummy the job was, and nobody cared about doing it, and you know that's why we're trying to hire more people and everything else, and now you want to expect them to go out there and do a good job? I don't think so, and I know of one company at that point in time, and this goes back quite a few years now, but they hired a crew of young fellows just out of high school to come in there and do the work. And they went out and vaccinated some chicks, got a six-pack of beer, and went on their way, ditched all the vaccine, and never vaccinated nothing.
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, then they couldn't wonder why all these birds were, you know, having all these problems out in the field. So
imagine the difference if he would have said, you know, you've got this new employer to in, and he set him down, and he said, well, you know, this is, you know, they tell him, encourage him, tell him how important his job is. You have a very important job for the success of this hatchery, and da-da-da-da-da-da, and they go out thinking, wow, I've got an important job here. I've got to do a good job. All these employees are depending on me, and it's just, you know, imagine just the difference in morale it would have made from that guy. No kidding.
Yeah, and then at the end of the day, you know, when they're telling you how crummy the job is, then they turn around and tell you, and not in so many words, but, you know, and on top of that, guess what? We're not going to pay you very much to do this. You know, it was just over minimum wage job back then, which wasn't much compared to what it is today. Minimum wage today isn't much either. But, you know, it's all how you do things. So getting back to the temperature thing, I would say several factors depend then on the viability of the embryos taking a hit as far as the temperature dropping. Now, we know the temperature going too high. If they've just been in there for a few days, you're probably going to get away with it pretty good. Those that were real weak embryos to start with are probably going to die anyway, so you might experience some mortality that way. On the other hand, the temperature drop, if it's a slower, gradual drop rather than a huge drop, probably not going to be as big a deal. And it's then you know, coming back and jump-starting them and, you know, getting them started all over again and getting that thing. And you're going to lose some there, too. Some will just, you know, they're weak enough that they can't take that downturn in temperature and they just die on you. And then others will come back. And it'll be a messy hatch. There isn't any question about that. You know, this is, you know, just something that, you know, we see it every now and then in the commercial industry, too. They make their mistakes just like everybody else. New hands coming in and new hatchery manager got his own ideas and changed things around and things don't go the way they want them to go and so on and so forth. But, you know, down the road, you know, you pay the price for it. That's why what I said last week, you know, if you are hatching in the hover baiter type incubator, and, you know, you hatch a lot of chicks, and, you know, every time they hatch out, you fill it back up, and you're hatching a good portion of the year, and it may behoove you to, if you can afford it, to have one of the incubators that you can plug into a 12-volt battery unit on your car, your cigarette lighter on your car, or things like that. And, you know, all you got to do is transfer the eggs over, and it's a momentary thing. They're all sitting in the turner, just turn it, you know, put it over there, and at least you will have, you know, less difficulties with it. And you amortize the money over the hatches that you hatch, and it turns out to be, you know, pennies per chick over a period of time. The more you hatch and you don't have the problem, it still turns out to be a very small amount of money over a period of time. With that, like anything, the initial investment is always an ouch, whether it's $100 or $5, depending on where you are on the scale. So everybody feels the pinch the same way. It just depends on what the end dollar amount is. But, you know, once you get down in that 50-degree category, you're starting to, you know, look at probably some real high mortality. They're probably just not going to snap back for you. And, again, it depends on how long they're going to be at that temperature. And I know for a fact that because I've dealt with it before, there are folks who have had that and had the power go out, and it was a very straggled hatch. That's what we call it, basically a straggled hatch, delayed hatch. And, you know, they pip and they don't get out, and then they pip and they do get out, and they're very what we call green. They're really, really wet. And, you know, they will eventually dry off, look like crap for a day or two, but they will come around, some of them, and some will die. But once you get down in that category, it's going to be tough. And I know there's somebody that will say they had them down 40 degrees for 2 days and they all survived. I'm happy for you. You know, you're lucky, but it's not the norm. So, you know, those types of things, you know, are, and again, it depends on when it's happening, when some critical system is developing and you stop it, okay, and that link with that system within the egg is broken, and there is no methodology to bridge that gap. It can't go on. It just can't. You know, for instance, if you look at the formation of the what we call the limb buds, this would be the beginnings of the wings and the legs. That's formed very early on, somewhere between 55, 60 hours. I can't remember the exact hour, but it really doesn't matter. It's right in that range, but 55 to 60 hours, maybe give or take one, four or five each way, those buds are going to be visible. And if you stop that growth, there is a possibility that, you know, it may not start again. And, you know, you have a chick that just won't develop. If that starts when the heart is forming, if that starts when the gastrointestinal tract is forming, you could have some issues, and that's why they don't finish developing. They die in the shell, or they get out and all kinds of abnormalities beset them, and they don't survive. So to me, more than anything that we do here today, anybody should take away from this thing besides that breaking it out and deciding who's what and where, and all of this other stuff, I think it is critical to understand that incubation, embryo development starts prior to the egg being laid. when the egg is being laid, whether it's early in the morning or it was the ovum was released in the bird's body late in the day, depends on how long that egg is going to stay in the body and continue to develop at that 106 degree body temperature versus being out and at whatever air temperature is outside. Just think, if it's 70 degrees outside and a bird lays a fertile egg right this minute, that's a 30 degree drop right there. Okay? And if that embryo that's developing in there was from a breeder flock that was probably, let's say, older or real, real young, you may have some embryo mortality there. It is age-related. And that's why when we did our series on nutritional supplements and so on, we talked about that. They're not a whole lot different than any other animal or human. As we get older, the immune system doesn't function quite the way it once did in a lot of cases. Not all, but a lot of cases. You may not be as healthy as you were, and they may not be as healthy as they once were. All of these things play into it, and if there are nutritional deficiencies, I don't care what you're feeding them. People say, I feed them, but I don't care. It doesn't matter, because it's what's absorbed from the feed that you're feeding into the system that matters. That's what really matters at the end of the day. Sure, good quality food, you know, they'd be applauded for that, no question. But it is what is absorbed into that bird's body that's going to produce that egg that you're asking that egg then to produce a viable chick for you. It's huge. And I know I sound like a broken record, but it's an extremely important part of this whole thing. And you'll find that a lot of this early mortality, a lot of these things, they happen for these particular reasons. You know, a breeder flock that isn't being tended to the way it should, all of these things. If I had a nickel for every time I heard, "Well, I just thought," I'd be rich, believe me, beyond belief. But it just doesn't work that way.
Yep.
You know, it's something is causing it, and the whole idea and the whole design behind this thing today is to get you motivated to, when you're hatching eggs, if you've got a 95% hatch, you know, and you're interested in why the other 5% didn't hatch, fine, break them out and find out. But when you've got a hatch that you were expecting some really good results from, and the No, and it turns out crummy. You're foolish if you don't do it.
Yeah. If they have a 95% hatch rate, then they probably hear this very often.
You see folks on forums and stuff, they get disappointed when they have like 75%, 80%, or 65%. God, I hate it. They get all bummed out. And, you know, every large hatchery I've ever had, I specifically ask that. I'm like, what percentage hatch rate are you happy with? And, I mean, it's like, 72%. I'm thrilled, you know, 65%.
Yep.
We'd like to have 80. 82 would be... we'd be jumping on the rooftop. But, I mean, even with the technology that they've got, these walk-in, stand-up, oh, my gosh. And so I'm like, what are you happy with? Are these folks that, I'm a little giant, all I got me is 75%. I mean, it's a styrofoam tabletop incubator, for Pete's sake. So I always ask that because to put it in perspective that, you know, yeah, they're putting in, you know, a million eggs, but at the same time, they're thrilled and happy with, if they can get 75%, it's game on. If it's anything above that, it's extra game on.
Yeah, and, in my opinion, I mean, if you're going to do this, I mean, and you're setting out, you know, most people want to have a good hatch. Here's a little tip that I learned over the years. And so when you're breaking these eggs out, okay, one of the other big deals is malposition. Malposition is how the bird is positioned for hatching, okay? It's another reason why they pip the shell and don't get out. And lots of times, again, we talk about the proper position, with the head under the right wing and so on. But when you open an egg, okay, and the bird has its beak and stuff above that wing, not under it, but above it, it indicates at some point in time, this goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, at what age is that temperature going to be more critical? It is certainly going to be more critical out there at that point in time when this overposition is going to take place. When we talked about not candling them, a monkey and around them at 17 days of age, for me, I wouldn't even open an incubator from that point on. Well, hatches, because there's nothing you can do about it, and what's the point? But on small incubators, you know, big commercial hatchery, different story. But when you see that, that is an indicator of heat stress, you see. So there are a lot of things that you can do to decide what's going on. You know, maybe the temperature spiked in the thing for just a moment or two or whatever, for whatever reason, and it never does it again. I've had incubators, both small and large, do that. You know, and you go through every system on the thing and everything's fine and it never happens again. Who knows why it happened? But it happens every now and then. There are anomalies that come along that can't be explained the way we'd all like them to be explained. But that's a tip-off. So knowing these little things and knowing these things that are going to cause different embryo mortality at different times, are important in determining what's happened with this hatch so that we can prevent it from happening with the next hatch. And, again, that's the whole idea of what we're talking about here today. I can't give every little thing. I can't sit here and I'd have to run off somewhere and try to make a list for you and sit for an hour or two, and I'm not going to do that. I always inform you when I'm reading to you, and I don't feel like doing that. So, but it is important that you take away from this thing that if you're having a poor hatch, that there are ways that you can determine what went wrong and then set a plan of action to go about fixing it. You know, I do the same thing, and this is a little off topic, but I do the same thing for folks that call me who have problems with different types of diseases, whether it be coccidiosis or mycoplasma or something like that, and we talk about getting an action plan together. What plan of action are you going to take now that you've found this problem to resolve this problem? You can either do nothing and continue to have crappy hatches and that type of thing. And there are people that do it. I see it all the time. Mm-hmm. One after another, they didn't fix the original problem. You know, just because you had a crummy hatch today, just because you're putting more eggs in next week doesn't mean that's going to be any better than the last one. You know, and so people need to try to figure these things out. And I know there are some people that just can't do it for a number of reasons, and I'm okay with that. This is not an arm-twisting session by any stretch. You know, I fully understand that folks can't do it. Everyone to them is their baby, and I'm cool with that. I understand it. But, you know, they need to know that some of these things, these things happen. And, you know, we don't know 100% what causes every malposition that a bird may have. They can have another one with their head between their legs. It's obviously something went wrong somewhere along the line. Or to my way of thinking, it's probably somebody that candled the eggs and spinning the eggs around and that kind of thing. So from my perspective, the less you do with candling eggs, I think the better off you are. Some of the other things that when you break out some of these eggs and you see that clearly there is something wrong with the embryo, for instance, the guts may be hanging out and that kind of thing, and not in the right position growth-wise and everything, usually, again, an indication of high incubation temperature. Um, There's another one, like an encephalomyelitis type thing, where the brain is exposed, and that has a problem to do with early incubation temperatures that are too high. So, you know, you can hurt yourself all the way along. When we come to talk about the temperature before, you know, the 100-degree plus, and then the downside with being down around 50 degrees or so, you can get away with an awful lot sometimes. I've seen it happen, you know, both ways. Early in my career, and I hate to even tell the story because it makes me sound like a dope, but, you know, when you're in a learning process,
we've all been there.
Yep. And, you know, had a bunch of eggs set and was overset and didn't need them. And I said, well, we'll just end this right now. Just unplug them all and close up the incubators. And by God, you come back the next day and we had eggs and chicks hatched all over the place. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that another time you would do that and the mortality would be through the roof. And actually at that point, that's what I wanted. I didn't want any more, but had plenty. And but you live and you learn. And that's, you know, that's basically, you know, what this is all about here.
I shared earlier, people heard talking about setting, in fact, I mentioned in this very show, setting the incubator next to the window in the kitchen, and it just happens to be the side of the house. The sun comes up, and you walk in there, and it's 128 degrees or in your incubator because the sun's coming through the window, and the sun is hitting the incubator. So, hey, raising my hand, guilty, you know? I mean, it happens to the best of us, whether it be just not thinking about that situation or going through the learning process. I said, this is going to be great. Check them, you know, whatever. Set it on the little table. Right inside, and boom, sun came in, and like literally, we I don't know what the temperature was. It was just obnoxiously high, and we were like, oh well, so much for that hatch. It was early on, but versus having that already 18 days, you know, whatever invested in it, it was very early on. Maybe the next, you know, within 3 to 4 days, but it was a been there, done that.
Yeah, you know, a lot of your dead in shell or failures to get out are temperature and humidity related, and in the majority of cases, in almost every case, you know, from your early dead through mid dead and even your late deads, there certainly can be nutritional issues that cause these things, but they're not the only things, and so that's why you need to go through and see where they were, and you know, you'll be able to make some judgment calls on what you're going to do and how you're going to, you know, set your plan to go from there. But and again, I can't emphasize enough either, having an extra snap switch or an extra wafer or two or
cigarette
that kind
plug,
of thing.
Put a cigarette lighter in your car.
Yeah, I think it's just good common sense. You know, if you can afford it, if you can't, save up for it and sell some chicks and put your money to that if you can. Whatever you got to do to get yourself in a position. Because I go back and say many, many times, you know, dead birds don't pay bills. It doesn't matter whether you're a commercial operation or any other operation. So, I think. You know, again, it would behoove people to do that. When birds fail to get out at and I've been asked this question, you know, what, you know, they pip, they were alive at that point, why don't they get out? And usually we start looking at things there, too, that those are weak chicks that may have come from eggs that were stored too long. And I also get this thing, well, I only had them for a week or eight, 9 days. And it's how they're held. It's the temperature, all the things we talked about before, that starting and stopping of that embryo from growing. All of those things, again, come back into it. If they're, it can be a problem with the when they die at pipping. We look at nutritional deficiencies. We look at how long the eggs were held before we incubated them. We look at the whether we set eggs right side up or not. Most people, I would hope, at this point in time, if you're doing this and stuff, even if you're a beginner, you would at least know that much. If not, you certainly need to make sure that they're taken care of. Contamination of eggs, easily done through cracked eggs. People do set cracked eggs. On occasion, cracked eggs do hatch. Just depends on how bad the crack is and where it is. Thin eggshells that from older birds that are not laying down as much calcium have a tendency to be more porous, have a tendency to dry out quicker, and don't hatch generally as well as one that is has a little bit more calcium on it and not as porous. That being said, if your hatches are uneven, meaning some birds are hatching and they're all in there and everything was they're all these eggs are in there together, and I know some people can't do this because of the amount of eggs they have, but if you've got a bunch of large or larger eggs in with a bunch of small eggs, you're going to have smaller eggs that are probably going to hatch before the large eggs, so you get, again, without your own problems, you didn't know it, but you're creating a problem for yourself because you're going to have that straggled hatch again. You're going to have those that are going to be hatching a little bit early on you, and then those that are going to be hatching possibly even later. Larger eggs take longer to heat up. That takes the incubation process a little bit longer. 21 days, again, is technically an average. It can be up or down by a day or more based on, again, going back and looking how long the egg was in the bird before it was laid, because we know incubation does start inside the bird. So all of these things all add up to where you want to go with it, and hopefully I've helped some people here today, giving you enough information. We can always go back through it again, but egg breakouts are very, very important. Hopefully whenever I get my book done, all of this information and then some will be in this book, including a detailed outline of everything that happens for every day of incubation with the embryo pictures to go with it. So we're working on it. I've actually really been working on it.
I hope so. I know a lot of people that are hoping so. That is for sure. No, got to love that. What great information. Last week, folks, if you missed it, these two shows go together. So if you happen to miss it or joined us late during this show, then all the shows are archived for your listening pleasure. So as Doc says, it would behoove you to listen to both episodes, the one last Monday and, of course, today, because they're absolutely related, especially if you're going to be hatching out chicks anytime soon, or that's a project in your future. So we thank you very much for sharing that with us today. Peter Brown, also founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com, where I know he's got the very popular probiotic. That's a hot topic right now that everybody's talking about. Stop giving the store-bought yogurt with artificial color, artificial flavor, high fructose corn syrup, and sugar. That's probably not doing much of a darn thing for your chickens. And if you want to help them with some probiotic, he's got it, $19.95 and a bottle that you can add directly to the water. He's also got, you know, you've been reading the studies all about the benefits of the oregano, is it right?
Yeah, the oil of oregano. Actually, we're doing fairly reasonably well with that.
With your turkey farm?
Yeah, he's all done. Never had an outbreak. He still has some birds there for the upcoming New Year, but they're good to go. And
I bet he was giddy, wasn't he, with all the results?
Yeah, because in relation to the mortality that he used to have, and the medications that were bought, the wormers that were bought, the labor to do all of this, he's way ahead of the game now. He's been very, very happy. Actually, I have a friend of mine who goes there and gets three or four turkeys every year from them, and he said that they've been the largest turkeys he's ever gotten from them. And so they grow better when the gut's in good shape. They're going to grow. They're going to grow like weeds. And the Food and Drug Administration recently, this week or last, they like to come out with this stuff on the weekends, so they figure nobody will read it. But at any rate, there was a report there where they're going to have some of the drug companies, I guess it's a voluntary thing, I guess, agree to not use some of these medications in the growth cycle of birds, or use them as growth promotants. Whether they'll be able to use them for disease purposes, I don't know. But the whole idea of it is supposed to be watched over by the company veterinarian, and I'll just tell you this, what I know about the whole deal from years past. It didn't work then, and it won't work now. Mm-hmm. And we had Baytril available at that time back then in a liquid that you put in the drinking water, came in a quart and a gallon, and it was so abused by the commercial poultry industry. It was supposed to be regulated by their veterinarians writing a prescription for a specific farm that he diagnosed himself, and it just wasn't happening. And it got out of hand, and because of that, the way it was handled, of course, that's not exactly how they tell you. They tell it was because of more problems with antibiotic-resistant Campylobacter being a bigger factor since mm-hmm. the introduction of Baytril, blah, 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 blah. But it probably wouldn't have happened had it been used properly. And so they're going back to the same thing that didn't work, typical government garbage. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm all for the move away from the antibiotic thing. I get it. I understand it. I've been doing it for years. And that's why we've moved in the direction we have with having products that work from a natural standpoint, and they do work. I've got people that are reordering the stuff multiple times because they know it works. They're not spending their money because, it's an illusion. But, you know, this particular thing, they're not going to move away from it. Look, there are poultry companies out there on the commercial side that are moving away from it. We have them here. I'm not going to mention them by name, but there are several here that are starting to see the light. There are instances probably when they're going to have to come in with medications. There isn't any question about that when you grow on the scale that they do. But by and large, they're moving away from it too because they know that their customers don't want it. You don't spend billions and billions and billions of dollars over a period of 40 years plus building a brand and then just, throw it down the drain. Everybody that has an agenda, and I think I'll throw this out there, because I don't know that much about it, nor do I care that much about it, but you've all seen the GMO crap on Facebook and every other place. Well, just the other day, the scientific journal Elsevier, something or other, who allowed this thing to be printed where the rat guts were rats were supposedly fed GMO corn and their guts turned to whatever. And been peer-reviewed now, and all of his data this guy has been put in. It was a very small group. He used a particular strain of rats that are known that even without the GMO would produce these tumors. So see, if you've got an agenda, you can stack the deck in your part. I'm not condoning GMO corn or anything other GMO at my age. I give a rat's butt about it. It doesn't matter. I get it. But, good solid science, good stuff you can hang your hat on. And now the article that I read, his data is being withdrawn. And because it wasn't, he had an agenda. Somebody was probably, greasing his pocket. And if they weren't, can't say they were, but if they weren't, he's got an agenda or an axe to grind for some reason or other. And it wasn't good science. It was not done properly. And these were other scientists that were calling him out. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it is. So, everybody has an agenda.
I've said this quote for probably 20 years, orange juice has been proven to prevent certain types of cancer, study paid for by Minute Maid.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example, I've said that for a long time. Yeah, exactly. If you have the company paying the researchers that wants a particular outcome, then, again, it will probably be that outcome, a lot of times.
Yep.
So it's interesting, especially if there's any money behind it. I mean, if there's no money, if there's no money behind it, it probably wouldn't be studied being done anyway. But,
yep.
But exactly. So, well, Peter, thanks so much for joining us today, this Monday. we do appreciate you, and that's great information, folks. Again, if you tuned in late, great episode today. Last Monday, the same thing. They tie in together. Listen to the archive, iTunes.com, podcast.com, Zoom.com, and right here on Blog Talk Radio. So, Peter, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Great topic and great, great information. Hope you've got all the notes down, folks, for our listeners, and we'll return right after this short break. Hey, speaking of incubation.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
All right, folks, thank you very much for tuning in today. Another great episode with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Go check them out. They've got the oil of oregano. They've got the probiotics we talk about here on the show a lot. They also has that emergency medicine kit you can add to your first aid kit. Everybody's always talking about first aid kits and issues for injuries and things like that. This is a first aid emergency medicine kit. If you don't want to buy an entire bottle of medicine that's going to cost out the wazoo and has an expiration date on it just to sit there, and we hope it goes bad. I hope I don't have to use it. You don't want to have to do that. But he has a whole kit with smaller doses, smaller amounts, $24.95, that you can have on hand to get your bird started if they have an issue immediately. How many times do we talk about on this radio show when he talks to somebody who's got sick birds? What you've got that we can start them on? Nothing. Okay, well, now you have to wait for me to get this to you and then start it, and that could be the meaning of life and death. So this is something $24.95. You'll have what you need. If it expires, you're out $24.95. Not $48.95 or $69.95 from this big bottle of stuff you had to buy that also expired. So it just makes sense. FirstStateVetSupply.com. And we will return tomorrow, but remember, tomorrow is an evening episode, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Quail Lady Alexandra Douglas is going to be here talking all about quail diseases. You're not going to want to miss it, okay? She is wonderful. And I know a lot of you have gotten quail or are interested in quail, already have quail, have a lot of experience with quail already. But we will have Alexandra Douglas, the Quail Lady, here tomorrow evening, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking all about quail diseases. You're not going to want to miss it, so make sure you bring those Chicken Whisperer notebooks back. Again, special evening episode tomorrow, 8 p.m., and I will be reminding everybody on Facebook and Twitter. Until then, God bless everybody. Thank you.